Good afternoon. Welcome, everyone. I'm going to call to order the Senate Committee on Workforce. Today is Wednesday, March 29th, 2017. Before we get started, I want to note that we have a change in the agenda. We are going to be, for now, carrying over Senate Bill 416 and clarifying. Can I carry it over to Wednesday, or do I have to? I think we carry it over to Monday,
or we can reschedule it for Wednesday.
Okay, I think we'll go ahead and reschedule for Wednesday, April 5th, Senate Bill 416, for those who are here for that. And we're going to go ahead and open a work session on Senate Bill 41, and I'm going to ask Deborah to summarize the bill, please.
Senate Bill 41 was introduced by the Employment Department. It clarifies that the Employment Department may disclose information in department records to public universities and OHSU. It authorizes the department to disclose information in department records to regionally accredited private nonprofit institutions of higher education as needed for certain planning and analysis. It authorizes the department to disclose any personal establishment level information secured from public universities and OHSU, employment class size assigned to employing unit, and list of the largest employers by geographical region. It also updates citations to controlling federal law, updates administrative duties and authorities of the department director concerning workforce and labor data analysis, clarifies that home care workers are not state employees for the purposes of workforce and labor market information, repeals the occupational program planning system, and deletes provisions related to discontinued shared information system. There is a dash one amendment that responds to guidance from the U.S. Department of Labor that certain provisions of Senate Bill 41 could put the Employment Department out of conformance with current federal guidelines. The amendment ensures conformity with federal guidelines by removing authorization to share confidential information with accredited private universities and to disclose employment size class of business, top 10 business lists for Oregon statewide counties, workforce areas in larger cities, and online mapping tools that show businesses as dots on maps. It clarifies that current data sharing partnership between the Employment Department and the Public Employees Retirement System remain in place. There is no fiscal impact and no revenue impact.
Okay. I'm going to go ahead and ask for a motion, please.
Chair Taylor, I move to adopt the dash one amendment dated March 9, 2017 to Senate Bill 41.
Senator Knope moves to adopt the dash one amendment dated March 9, 2017. Is there any discussion? Did you have any questions? I thought you motioned there, Senator Hensel. Sorry. Is there any objection? If not, the amendments are adopted. Chair Knope.
Vice Chair Knope.
Vice Chair Knope.
Anyway, I move Senate Bill 40.
Do you need a carrier on this?
Eventually. Okay. I move Senate Bill 41 as amended to the floor with a B-pass recommendation.
Senator Knope moves Senate Bill 41 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, any objection? The motion passes. We need to assign a carrier, which is Senator Hansel. Thank you very much. We'll close the work session on Senate Bill 41. We're going to open a work session on Senate Bill 42. Deborah, please summarize the bill.
This one's also introduced by the Employment Department. It reverses amendments to statute made in enrolled Senate Bill 1534 from 2016, previously determined by the United States Secretary of Labor to be out of conformity with federal law. There are no amendments, no fiscal impact, and no revenue impact.
Okay. I ask Vice Chair Knope for the motion, please.
Sure. Chair Taylor, I move Senate Bill 42 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Knope moves Senate Bill 42 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? The motion passes. I'd like to assign a carrier. Anyone interested in carrying the bill? Senator Montes Anderson, thank you for agreeing to be the carrier. And close the work session on Senate Bill 42. So, ladies and gentlemen, you saw that I did take things slightly out of order. We needed to pass some bills out, so I apologize for that. But now we are going to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 984. Ask Deborah to please summarize the bill.
This bill was introduced by the Committee on Business and Transportation. It requires employers in industry subject to statutes requiring overtime pay for work exceeding the maximum statutory hours in any one day to calculate overtime payment on daily and weekly basis and pay the greater amount. There are no amendments at this time, but I understand that one is coming.
Okay. So I understand Senator Johnson wanted to be here. Does anyone know if Senator Johnson's going to be able to join us? Okay, so let's go ahead and bring up Betsy Earls and Amanda Dalton, please.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Betsy Earls representing Associated Oregon Industries and the Oregon Business Association, and appearing before you in support of Senate Bill 984. Senate Bill 984 addresses a recent change in the interpretation of how an employer should pay for a manufacturing employee when that employee has worked enough daily overtime hours in 1 week that they end up also being owed weekly overtime. The situation arises frequently in many sectors of the manufacturing industry. For example, we have many high-tech manufacturers whose employees alternate working four 12-hour days in 1 week with three 12-hour days in the next week. In these situations, manufacturing employers have long relied on BOLI's published technical assistance manuals to reconcile the requirements of Oregon's daily and weekly overtime statutes and figure out how to pay their employees the correct amount. The BOLI manuals have for years advised that when employees who are entitled to daily overtime have also worked more than 40 hours in the work week, the employer should calculate overtime wages for hours worked on both a daily and weekly basis and then pay the greater of the two amounts. Although BOLI's wage and hour manuals are not necessarily legal advice, employers are entirely justified on relying on BOLI's advice in how to interpret the laws that BOLI itself regulates and enforces. Last fall, a lawsuit was filed alleging that the daily and weekly overtime statutes were separate laws and that should therefore be enforced and paid separately. The result of this interpretation, if it was followed to its logical conclusion, would be that employees could end up being paid double overtime for any daily overtime hours that they worked that resulted in them working more than 40 hours a week. Before that lawsuit could be decided, BOLI revised its technical assistance manuals to state that instead of paying the greater of the daily or weekly overtime amount, employers should calculate wages earned for daily and weekly overtime and then pay both amounts, essentially requiring employers to pay double overtime for hours that daily overtime hours that put an employee into a situation where they were working more than 40 hours a week. The Multnomah Circuit Court ultimately decided against this interpretation of the law, but the underlying statutes still need to be clarified, and that brings us to Senate Bill 984, and that's why we are before you today. Senate Bill 984, as amended, and you can see our draft amendments in OLIS. We don't have them back from Legislative Council yet, I don't believe. Basically puts BOLI's former interpretation back in place and says that if an employee works more than 10 hours in a day and more than 40 hours in a week, the employer calculates the greater of the weekly and daily overtime and pays the greater amount of the two. By placing this language in the law, the daily and weekly overtime statutes will be coordinated in such a way that you can give effect to both of them. Both the daily and weekly overtime are each paid to the employee at a rate of 1.5 times the regular rate of pay without violating the weekly overtime statute's prohibition on paying more than 1.5 times the regular rate of pay for any hours over 40. It's our position that if opponents of this bill want to address issues of workplace health and safety, requiring employers to pay double overtime is not the way to do it. Rather, they should seek to amend Oregon's OSHA laws or workers' compensation laws, and we would be more than happy to work with them on that project. In the meantime, we do ask your support to clarify the application of Oregon's daily and weekly overtime laws. And I would refer you in OLIS to a chart that is from BOLI's new technical assistance manual. I think it's titled BOLI New Overtime Chart, and it gives you a better example than I can describe of how daily and weekly overtime hours can break down and end up being in different amounts, paid differently by employers.
Okay, thank you. I noticed that Senator Johnson popped her head in. Would you mind going in the hallway? Oh, maybe this is her. There she is. Senator Johnson. Hi. You must have heard us saying your name. Ms. Earls, staff is Did you want to clarify about that?
I do not believe the amendment is on OLS yet, since we haven't received it from LC.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, you're correct. I put just a draft amendment that we had put together on OLS, and it's the one that's in red type.
Okay, so it'll say, just for those if anyone's watching, so it'll be the draft amendment to Senate Bill 984 in draft format, and should be up there.
But it's not in LC format.
She says it's up there. Perfect. Okay, perfect. Just to clarify. All right. Senator Johnson, nice to see you.
Thank you. Forgive me. That's been one of those days. For the record, my name is Betsy Johnson. I represent Senate District 16. The intention behind our daily overtime laws was to ensure that employees who work more than 10 hours a day are compensated for the additional hours at a rate of 1 1/2 pay. Likewise, the intention behind our weekly overtime laws was to ensure that employees who work more than 40 hours a week are compensated for the additional hours at the rate of 1 1/2 pay. Paying employees the greater of daily or weekly overtime fulfills both of these intentions. For years, Boley and employers have interpreted the state's overtime laws as the two parts of the whole, paying employees entitled to daily and weekly overtime the greater of the two amounts. But a recent lawsuit challenged that common sense interpretation and argued that employers should pay double overtime for the hours that are both daily and weekly overtime. In response to the filing of the lawsuit before any decision was rendered, it appears that Boley changed their longstanding interpretation of how to pay daily and weekly overtime, saying that any daily overtime hours that push a worker into weekly overtime should be paid basically twice, once as daily overtime and again as weekly overtime. In other words, those hours would be paid at three times the regular rate of pay. It's my opinion that SB 984 clarifies the statutory language to reflect Boley's former interpretation when hours count as both daily and weekly overtime, and employers should calculate both and pay the employee the higher of the two wages. I think that this is a common sense, pro-business bill that will restore much needed stability to Oregon's wage and hour laws.
Thank you. Anybody, any questions for Senator Johnson? Okay, all right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I don't know if you wanted to stay or if you had to get going.
No, I'm supposed to be three places right now.
All right.
Anyway, I'm going to excuse myself.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Ms. Dalton.
Chair Taylor and members of the committee, Amanda Dalton here on behalf of the Northwest Grocery Association, representing grocery retailers, manufacturers, and suppliers across the state of Oregon. As you've heard today, or you will hear today, about the challenges and stresses of these manufacturing jobs. And as Ms. Earle said, we recognize that. We value all of our employees, all of the members of our team. We are open to a discussion about safety in the workplace if that's the primary concern. We don't agree that this is the vehicle for that discussion, but would love to have it. I know this is, we've said to you, this is a simple fix bill. It's not as simple when we talk about it, just because it is a little bit of confusing. There are two separate statutes in the Oregon law books that addressed overtime for manufacturers, very specific just to a certain type of employment, one addressing daily and one addressing weekly. We echo Senator Johnson's comments that the bill before you reflects a common sense interpretation, one that has been interpreted as such for decades, that employers should not pay double overtime for hours that are both daily and weekly overtime. As Ms. Earls mentioned, the Bureau of Labor and Industries issues the Boley Wage and Hour Division prepares and provides employers with guidance through their Technical Assistance for Employers and Field Operators manuals. Prior to December of 2016, for years, this manual stated that, quote, when employees who are entitled to and have worked daily overtime have also worked more than 40 hours in the work week, the employer should calculate overtime wages for hours worked on both a daily basis and a weekly basis, and then pay the greater amount of the two, end quote. In December of 2016, after a lawsuit was filed in Multnomah County, as you've heard, against an employer for violating the overtime law, Boley revised this manual to advise employers that they must calculate those two formulas and then pay both of those amounts. So I want to give you an example under this interpretation. An employee who worked 4 days during the work week for 12 hours each day would be entitled to 2 hours of overtime for each day for a total of 8 hours, plus 8 hours for the weekly overtime calculation, totaling 16 hours of overtime, a double counting of those same 8 hours of overtime worked. In the opinion issued in the Multnomah County Circuit Court March 9th, dismissing the claim, which I'll email to the committee to put on OLIS, I apologize, I didn't do that in advance, dismissing the claim that we mentioned earlier, the judge agreed with the longstanding interpretation of the overtime laws, finding that the state's overtime laws requires employers to do as they have always done, pay employees the greater of daily or weekly overtime pay, specifically stating that Boley's pre-December 2016 interpretation of overtime laws, quotes, creates a consistent reading of the statutory scheme by treating an overtime hour as something that must be paid at the rate of time and one half, the regular wage, once in all circumstances, not twice. The legislative clarification contained in Senate Bill 984 with the Dash 1 amendment, which replaces the bill but clarifies the intent, ensures that the overtime statutes work cooperatively and not in distinction with one another, and we urge your support.
Okay. Thank you. Any questions? Senator Monsanto.
I know you've come to talk to me about this, and I still need some clarification. If we're talking about industries where they have to do really hard and arduous work, it seems like it would be fair. I mean, if they are really doing hard and arduous work, is this going to be a huge fiscal impact on employers? And I'm wondering, does this actually revert back to the lower overtime rate?
Madam Chair, Senator Monis Anderson, I'm not sure about your question about does it revert back to a lower overtime rate. What lower overtime rate?
Just explain how the overtime is calculated and now and then how this bill changes that. I just need that clarified.
Sure. Madam Chair, Senator Monis Anderson, for manufacturing employers or employees, the daily overtime statute, which was enacted sometime in the early 1900s, requires employers to pay time and a half any time an employee works over 10 hours a day. They're not allowed to work more than 13 hours a day, but between 10 and 13 hours, they must be paid time and a half.
Okay.
Sometimes if somebody works several of those days in a row, obviously that will put them into weekly overtime as well. And the weekly overtime statute was enacted, I mean, I think 50 years later, or something like that. So they can end up working hours that are both daily and weekly. So Boley has always said, you employer figure out how much you owe for daily overtime, then look at how many weekly overtime hours were worked, which can be less. Figure out how much you owe there, and then pay whichever amount's greater. You pay time and a half for whichever of those hours are more.
And it's not hard to track that information. For employers. Okay. All right.
I don't believe that we have ever heard of a problem with tracking that information. And if there is a mistake, then I think that goes down as wage theft.
Okay.
And Chair Taylor and Senator Monis Anderson, Amanda Dalton, I would just add that that's the way that employers have been doing it for 50 plus years, is calculating daily and weekly and then paying whichever number is higher. They're the same hours. The one formula requires you to count the hours twice. One formula, which is what we've been operating under, counts the hours once. And it's just specific to manufacturers. I will tell you that the definition of manufacturer is not in statute, it's in rule. It is fairly broad. So it's not just unique to those very hard jobs. So I think you'll hear a lot about that today. But in terms of changing or paying a lower rate, this bill would not change anything going forward, outside of the fact that employers in this state have been operating under a revised technical advisement from the Bureau of Labor and Industries for 3 months now. Otherwise, for the last 50 plus, 1913, I think, is the last one, we've been adding daily, weekly, and paying the greater of the two. out.
I'm still confused.
Pardon me, would it be helpful to have Gail come? She's the drafter, Gail Stevens. Would you like to have, because we can have her come.
I don't know if that would help me or not.
Well, because the, she, I'm sure, can run over, and if she's available, I'm sure she's watching. And then, because we have additional folks, or we can have both of them, I think, are pretty well-versed in the legislation.
But with this, you're saying that employers sometimes are really paying a whole lot more than they should be paying to the employees who are doing overtime?
Madam Chair.
With this new interpretation.
Certainly, Madam Chair, Senator Montes-Anderson, this interpretation would require employers to pay twice what they should be paying by law for overtime hours. So basically three times. You might want to take a look at this thing that's in OLIS that's titled Bully Overtime Chart, because it does show how daily hours can stack up to weekly hours. It's the Bully new revised technical assistance manual that was that has the interpretation we don't like. However, the examples are excellent.
Yeah. We'll find it.
Well, while you're looking at that, Senator Montes-Anderson, Senator Gelser has a question. Is that okay? Okay, Senator Gelser.
Thank you. So I think I understand the idea of you might have overtime if you've calculated on the basis of a day. So maybe you could end up with overtime if you worked for a week, if you worked 9 hours on multiple days, but that wouldn't necessarily be right.
That is exactly right.
So this is the question that I have. Wouldn't those, as I've puzzled over this and the charts, wouldn't those be a lot of really long shifts in a single week if to trigger that the daily overtime has to be over 10 hours? So to get to over 10 hours a day and over 40 hours in a week, you would have to have, and in the example that you gave where there's, you know, the 2 hours to get to the, in 4 days to get to the 16 hours that are double paid, wouldn't you then have to have at least 4 12-hour days in that week to make that happen?
So again, Madam Chair and Senator Gelser, I would refer you to this chart. It says Bully New Overtime Chart. That's the title in OLIS.
Right.
And if you look at the very top chart, you'll see that there are a couple of days that have long shifts. There's a 12-hour shift on Monday and an 11-hour shift on Friday. Tuesday is an 8-hour shift. Wednesday and Thursday are 5-hour shifts.
And Chair Taylor,
maybe we can have, pardon me, perhaps we can have, I'm not sure if that's going to be Gail. Nope. The Paloma, we could have Paloma come up also.
And it's more, I think it's more going to what's the, I mean, I'm just using the example that you had that was the 8 hours. So to get to, and that's different than what the chart is. But if that was the case, if somebody on more than one day, if they were getting to 8 hours of overtime, they're going to be paid at 16 hours, mm-hmm. which is where you get to kind of a bigger fiscal. It just seems like those are really, really long, really long days. What protection do these workers have? Are they able to say, I can't do 4 12-hour shifts this week, or do they risk losing their jobs? I'm just wondering if there's an incentive that's built into that to ensure that there aren't abuses of people having to work overtime in these pretty significant ways, if that's really what's happening. And then the second question was, do we know what the fiscal impact would be to employers? Like how many workers and how many hours are we looking at with this change?
So we could have, would you like to have Paloma answer that?
I would like anybody that can answer that. I mean, that really is kind of the crux of the bill.
If it's just
paying twice for the same hour, I've been thinking about this for a few weeks. Paying twice on the same hour doesn't make any sense to me. But if it is a deterrent, if the paying twice on the hour is a deterrent to vulnerable people kind of being forced into multiple 12-hour or larger work shifts in a week, then I can understand why maybe that policy was there. And I'm just trying to get my arms around how big is the problem. If we go with the new interpretation, what is that additional cost to the employers? If we make this change, are there problems that workers are having that have been unaddressed because of the way that the status quo, I realize this bill would make it the status quo. Is there a problem we're missing in this industry that not moving this bill would help us to it. So it's just, I'm trying to get my head around the bigger issues beyond the double pain of the hour. Please.
Can you respond, perhaps, Paloma, to any of the questions?
Chair Taylor, Senator Gelser, a lot of, based, I think, in large part based on the old interpretation, a lot of manufacturing functions on a 412 schedule. So when you've got that 412 schedule, either way, if you have to pay one or the other, the overtime would be the same amount either way. So daily or weekly, what you're going to get is either 2 hours of overtime every day or 8 hours at the end of the week. So that's part of why this is why some manufacturing has been particularly surprising to them and challenging to sort of wrap their heads around. I would like to clarify previous statements. It wasn't the lawsuit that prompted our change. It was that our interpretation was challenged. We were visited by some advocates, and they said, you know, we don't think your interpretation that you've had is consistent with what the statute said. We asked staff to go back and look at what the statute said, and that's how we came to this interpretation. The plain language of the statute, because they didn't reference one another, that's how we got to where we are.
Okay, and then we also have Gail Stevens is here, who's the drafter of the bill. Senator Mona Sanderson, mm-hmm. Maybe would you like to have her come up, the drafter?
If I can just add one more thing.
Yes, and so maybe we, Amanda, maybe you could just step back for one moment. Yep. We'll have Gail come up and go ahead.
Thank you, Chair Taylor and Senator Gelser. I think that we have an employer here, a manufacturing employer here, that can speak a little bit more to you about the financial impact of the change on their business.
Okay.
I've heard from many, it's wide ranging, but I could get you numbers, but they would be on a company by company basis.
Okay, that makes sense. That would be helpful, though, just to get a sense of.
Mm-hmm. Go first.
Certainly.
Thank you.
Certainly. Senator Mona Sanderson, Gail Stevens has arrived, the drafter.
I'm not even sure what I should ask. It's just getting my hands around why the employer really feels that this may be onerous to them. I just, that's why I'm not sure you can answer it any better than the others.
Maybe walk us through so everyone understands or something.
Chair Taylor, Senator Mona Sanderson. So the question that you're sort of implying is whether the employers find this inconvenient, the new Bowie's new interpretation. So I can't speak to whether employers find it inconvenient or not. I can talk a little bit about the law as it exists in Bowie's new interpretation. If
why
you would
don't
like
you
me
do that,
to
and
do
that, it might make sense to me.
Thank you, Chair Taylor, Senator Mona Sanderson. I don't know that the plain language of these bills necessarily answers the question, but I have looked into the legislative history behind these laws that goes back to, in one case, 1903, and in another case, the 19-teens or 20s. And initially, it was a crime, in many cases, to allow someone to work more than 8 hours a day or more than a certain number of hours in a week. Both of those would violate the law. So we believe, and I'm looking into this further, but initially I can say that our initial take is that Bowie's new interpretation is not inconsistent in guiding employers that paying both the daily and the weekly overtime would be necessary, mainly because the law affords an agency a great deal of deference in its interpretation of its own rules. And this statute is written in such a way that Bowie has complete authority to promulgate, in many ways, whatever rules it would like on this topic. The statute reads, the Commissioner of the Bureau of Labor and Industries shall promulgate rules to regulate overtime. I'm paraphrasing. Therefore, I believe that their interpretation, their guidance, their new revised guidance is a plausible interpretation of the law.
Okay. Did you follow up?
And just these workers, then they're in situations where it's really arduous work. I mean, it's, is that what it?
Senator Taylor and Senator Manos Anderson, I think that the definition of manufacture in the Oregon law is so broad that it could be arduous work. It could also be a situation where a high-tech employee is working in a manufacturing, what is technically a manufacturing setting where they're barely moving all day while they're working on back and forth and back and forth on small items. So I think if you want to get to particularly the more arduous jobs, you would be looking at a definition of manufacturer and a change there as opposed to a change to the daily, weekly overtime laws, which mainly deal with how much somebody is paid for how long they work as opposed to the relative difficulty of their job.
Well, I assume that this came to prevent abuse of our workers, correct?
Chair Taylor, Senator Manos Anderson, I believe that history shows that is correct.
Okay, Senator Knopf, you had a question.
Paloma. You said you didn't react to the lawsuit. Was Bowley aware that the lawsuit was happening?
Chair Taylor, Vice Chair Knopf, we were aware.
Follow up?
Yes.
So why did Bowley feel like it was necessary to make a determination before the lawsuit had run its course and the judge had made a decision?
Chair Taylor, Vice Chair Knopf, based on the our reading of the plain language of the statutes, because neither of the statutes had any cross-reference to one another to indicate that they were also in two different chapters. So our reading is that the legislature did not intend to connect the two. So it was an either or. So we were reading based on what the statute said. We felt compelled to clarify our interpretation.
Well,
yes.
Wouldn't the judge making a determination in the case be more clarification than Bowley, who I fully admit has the authority to do what they did?
Vice Chair Knopf, a circuit court opinion based on the very specific, very, very narrow facts of that case, and I believe also that the proponents of the plaintiff's attorneys that were representing the parties in that case, you know, may have had a different argument than what our plain language interpretation of the statutes were. So I don't think that, you know, our decision wasn't exclusive. It wasn't based on the unique facts of that case. Our decision to update the interpretation was based on reviewing of the statutes. So waiting on the determination of that case wouldn't make sense.
Okay. Senator Hansel.
I just want to make sure I think I understand it. Correct me if I'm wrong. Whenever these wage and hour laws were adopted, 1909 or whenever it was, the interpretation was between daily and weekly, whatever at the end was the greatest would be paid. For well over a century, until recently, that for whatever reason, Bowley reinterpreted, went to court. The judge then said, no, the original interpretation was correct. And basically what it is that under Bowley's new interpretation, if you work, let's use the 412s as an example, you've got a business, you work 412s, there's 8 hours daily additional overtime. But your interpretation was that not only do you have to pay the daily overtime, that also makes a weekly overtime. So instead of 8 hours, it's now 16 hours. And of time that was eight of it and was never worked. Is that correct?
Chair Taylor, Senator Hansel, there's a number of things in there, so let me try and get to all of them. One, I would clarify that Bowley was not a party to that lawsuit, so we didn't have any part in that. The laws were passed at different times. So the daily overtime dates back, we believe, to 1903. It predates the 40-hour work week requirement. So those two laws were passed, were enacted at different times. So we don't know.
Do you know the 40-hour work week when it was passed?
The FLSA went into effect 1938.
Okay, so from 1938 on.
37.
You have a 1903 bill and a 1938 bill, and from that point on, it was interpreted. Is that correct then?
I don't have data on, I don't have information about that.
But you changed what had been historically interpreted however many years, at least from 1938 on.
That is correct. And I would clarify that, so if an employee, we're getting into the weeds a little bit, but if an employee has been paid overtime, that overtime rate for daily overtime, then based on our current interpretation, they would get the additional half for daily overtime. They wouldn't get additional time and a half for both daily and weekly. So somebody worked 10 hours in a day, they would get paid time and a half, or they worked 11 hours in a day, they would get paid time and a half for that extra hour. And then if they worked 41, they ended up working 41 hours in a week, they would get an extra half time for that at the end of the week, the over 40 hours. So it's not time and a half for both daily and weekly, it's time and a half and then half. If you were to earn both daily and weekly overtime.
Senator Hansel, do you have any?
I'm kind of afraid to ask a question.
You ask any question you want, Senator Hansel. I'm here to support you 100% in your questions.
Well, I'm using the illustration that I thought was in your book, that if you, let's say you work 8 hours, you work 4 12s, that's 8 hours of overtime on a daily basis. Mm-hmm. So they get paid that, and then you're saying, what do they get for the weekly overtime then, under your interpretation?
At that point, they would have been paid time and a half for the weekly overtime or the daily overtime. Then they would get the equivalent of 4 hours of pay for the other overtime.
The other overtime being?
If they got paid already time and a half for daily overtime, that they would get paid 4 hours worth for the weekly overtime that they would have also earned.
Is that your understanding, Betsy, as to what the... I was under the impression that you get...
So under Paloma's, in your example, when you have the 12-hour days, at some point in the week you get to 40 hours more quickly than you would in 5 days. Yeah. So after that, then you have extra, you have the, I think that's the 4 hours you're referring to, is that right? Mm-hmm. When you get past 40 hours. So those are the hours that push you into time and a half for the weekly overtime. So I guess what I'm saying is, yes, that interpretation does make sense to me.
Okay. Senator Knope.
Paloma or Gail, do you know how other states treat manufacturing overtime?
Chair Taylor, Vice Chair Knope, I have looked at California, and they have an express provision that is similar to Boley's prior interpretation that the employer pay the greater of the two overtimes. That is expressed in plain language in California law. I haven't looked at other states.
Chair Taylor, Vice Chair Knope, California does have that provision. California also requires daily overtime after 8 hours for all employees. Alaska, on the other hand, allows both. You can earn both daily and weekly overtime.
Just to clarify, I have a question. They can or they're required to? In Alaska, it's mandatory.
They're required to pay both.
Oh, it is pay both.
Daily and weekly overtime. Based on my research when this first came up, we started digging around. There's not a lot of information out there states aren't sort of uniform, but I will also mention that Alaska exempts a lot of people from overtime, so.
Okay.
Is it possible to get information like on Washington, Idaho, Nevada, other states that surround Oregon?
Chair Taylor, Vice Chair Knope, as far as my research has revealed, and I did spend quite a bit of time on it, most of those states don't have daily overtime. They just have the weekly overtime.
Okay. Senator Mona Sanderson, feel free. This is the time. We have Gail here. We have Paloma here. It's an important...
So what, for the states that don't have weekly or daily overtime, just weekly overtime, I think that could be really onerous for a worker. Maybe not, because things average out. But if you're in a really tough job, I need examples.
Chair Taylor, Senator Mona Sanderson, I mean, it's true that Oregon made a decision long ago. Our daily overtime manufacturing overtime statute dates back to, I believe, 1903, and it was originally exclusively for women and children working in factories, making sure that they could be safe because they were working in dangerous conditions. But, you know, other states' labor laws came and evolved differently over time. That's just how it went.
I got a question.
Yes, Senator Knope.
Oh, thanks. Paloma, so... what you're telling me is in 1903, the daily overtime did not apply to men.
Vice Chair Taylor, Senator Knope, that is correct. Neither did minimum wage.
It didn't apply to men?
No.
Just women?
Yeah.
Senator Knope is poking fun at the chair because what? Of the...
No.
We are going to be discussing next in our committee in a few weeks. We're going to be discussing pay equity.
Well, Senator Taylor,
Yes, Senator Gelser.
Sadly, my master's thesis was about this. There's a reason why. There's a reason why. But it involved the Women's Christian Temperance Union and the entire social safety net of Oregon.
Fantastic. We are going to have a great time when we discuss pay equity, and I'm so thankful that Senator Gelser agreed to be on the Senate Workforce Committee, and I'm sure you are too.
Absolutely.
Senator Knope.
I'm looking forward to that.
It's going to be fun.
Yes, it's going to be fun. Everyone's worked so hard and come forward and answered all of our questions, I hope. Does anybody, we are approaching chamber deadlines soon here, so I really want to make certain that everyone understands what this is. We're obviously not having a work session today, but this is the time when we have the, we're going to call up more people, but I wanted, since we have Gail here, and I'm sure she's got to get back to work, and Paloma, if anyone has any other questions of them. Okay. All right. So thank you all for coming up, and we're going to call the next panel. We have Michael Dale, Jessica, from AFL-CIO, and Kate Newall from Family Forward. And then after that, we'll have J.L. Wilson, Lynn Barra, and then we will have for the last panel, Alejandro Mila, and Rai Som, and Margaret Brown. So folks can kind of plan their time. Mr. Dale.
Thank you. Senator Taylor, Chair Taylor, members of the committee, my name is Michael Dale. I work for the Northwest Workers Justice Project. We represent low-wage workers. We were the attorneys who brought the lawsuit that has been referred to earlier, and I wanted to clarify some things that I think were not correct in the earlier testimony, and then also make a point or two. In its current form, more or less its current form, basically when it didn't just apply to women and it applied to men in manufacturing and so forth, the daily overtime law actually dates all the way back to 2013. That law basically said this body, this legislature, made the determination that working more than 10 hours a day in manufacturing wasn't good for workers or families or for the state, and prohibited work longer than 13 hours a day, and said between 10 and 13 you had to pay time and a half. Now, there was no relationship back then to either the federal 40-hour week or state 40-hour week, because there was no such thing. The federal law didn't come in until the 30s. State law on minimum wage and overtime came in the 70s. So for many, many years, the only and sole overtime requirement in the state for manufacturing workers was you couldn't work more than 10 hours a day, time and a half after 10 hours a day, no working more than 13 hours a day. The purpose of that law was to allow people to be better citizens, to allow people to be better parents. And the idea of the time and a half was to make it more costly for employers to demand that of workers, basically so we wouldn't have a 13-hour day, because that wasn't good for people. And Senator Monis Anderson's perspective, it was onerous and burdensome. On OLIS, I think, is a sheet that looks like this. The top of it says cheat sheet sample week worksheet. That's HSIT. Apparently is pronounced cheat. And if you look at the daily hours, we're talking about a string of five 12-hour days, essentially, that this worker was being required to work. These are records from the lawsuit, and it's just a sample of the kind of onerous hours that are being demanded of people. Now, the idea that it might cost more for employers to make people work these hours isn't something that should be offensive to this body, because that was exactly what the legislature said it should do to encourage people not to make people work those kinds of hours, because working those kinds of hours made you bad parents, bad citizens, not capable of education and the other kinds of things that we would like people to have available. There was some reference about how somehow this law had been interpreted over, 50 or 60 years as being, between the two, you figure it out both ways and pay the highest. That actually is not true, because there was no requirement for weekly overtime until well into the 70s. So it couldn't have been until then. Now, Boley can't tell us exactly when the old interpretation, as it was presented, came into being. In fact, it cannot tell you how it occurred, because it just appeared on the website, and it was on the website for a while. And Boley, like this legislature, has a procedure about how it adopts policy. It adopts policy either through adjudication of a case, through rulemaking, or through informal policy making. Who makes those policies is the Wage and Hour Division of Boley, not the Technical Assistance Unit. The Technical Assistance Unit, this would be sort of like if OLIS put some policy up on the website, that somehow that became the interpretation of the legislature. It's just not so. When Boley first focused on this issue was in around the issues that ultimately gave rise to the lawsuit, and that was the first time the issue had come up in Boley, about how you calculate this. The Wage and Hour Division had never had an adjudication, and there had been no rulemaking or even informal policymaking by the relevant enforcement agency, the Wage and Hour Division. And the technical assistance people, by the way, wouldn't argue with that. On the very page, and this page is in your OLIS materials also. I apologize, they're not all together because I filed them late. But there's a disclaimer at the bottom of this so-called interpretation. And it says, nothing on this website is intended as legal advice. So they weren't advising people to do things. They were just trying to be helpful. Any responses to specific questions are based on the facts as we understand them and not intended to apply in other situations. This communication is not an agency order. If you need legal advice, please consult an attorney. We attempt to update the information as soon as practical, blah, blah, blah. But essentially they're saying you can't rely on this as an official interpretation of BOLI. So really the first BOLI interpretation of how you calculate this occurred in December of 2016, and that's the current policy today in terms of official interpretation.
So just excuse me, Mr. Dale. So I just want to understand. So you're saying that it's open for interpretation now?
No, I'm not saying that. BOLI has interpreted it.
I know BOLI has, but you're saying that it isn't. The legislature has given BOLI the authority to make the determination, and then it was
that's correct, and they have made that determination now, and they have done so through appropriate BOLI agency procedures. It's been done by the appropriate people, the wage and hour division, not technical assistance staff. And this is a statement that actually in the statement itself says that you can rely on this as the official policy of the state of Oregon. So that is the law today with respect to that. Now, there have been several statements made about the lawsuit and what had been decided or not in the lawsuit. First of all, the lawsuit was filed prior to the promulgation of the BOLI policy. The BOLI policy was not before the court. We argued for an interpretation, and the judge rejected our interpretation. But our interpretation was different from and unique from the interpretation of the Commissioner of Labor. So as far as the court having decided that the commissioner's policy is invalid, that's just simply not true. And as far as our arguments, you know, we've had a trial judge in a preliminary motion make a decision, but that's not the end of a lawsuit. And on important issues of public policy, one would expect to have clarification by a court of appeals, perhaps even the Supreme Court. And so this issue, even in the lawsuit, is far from over. But be that as it may, the decision of the court was a decision about our humble arguments as to how to interpret the law, which were different in some significant respects from what the Commissioner of Labor has done in the policy statement that is the current law in Oregon. So I started out by saying that in 1913, when we adopted the daily overtime law, the idea was not to have huge long work days. In the 70s, and I'm sorry I don't have the exact date, but I think it was 73 maybe, Oregon adopted a 40-hour work week. The point of the 40-hour work week, the policy behind it, is different. The idea of the 40-hour work week is we have people who are unemployed and we have people that are working extremely long hours. And it really would be better for the economy if more jobs were made available rather than having the same people work excessive hours. And so the idea of the 40-hour work week was to kind of spread the work around, or at least make it economically in the interest of employers to do that. That's a somewhat related policy to the daily overtime statute, but it's different. So essentially what you have is you have daily overtime with one policy adopted 50 years before another policy for a different reason, and our argument in the analysis of BOLI is those are two independent statutes that aren't related to each other, and the rights and remedies under each statute stand alone. That is, we believe, the state of the law now, and we think that certainly till the dust settles on all this, it's important for the legislature to not jump into this and muddy the issue even more. And if you were inclined to do that, I'd ask you that if we thought in 1913 that it was uncivilized to demand this kind of a work schedule from working people, particularly in manufacturing, why would we go backwards? Why would we step back? It makes no sense. I urge the committee to basically not move this bill forward. I have to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Dale. I have a question. So the maximum hours that one is allowed to work in a day in manufacturing is how many?
13.
Okay. So that would still stay in place?
Unless you amended it. Yes, the answer would be yes.
Okay, but if this bill were, if 984 were to pass, would the 13 hours a day still be in effect?
Yes.
Okay. And so I'm concerned about, you just were speaking about going back. Not that I want people working 13 hours a day, that's quite a bit, especially 5 days in a row. So you just were referencing going back. So how would that be?
Going back to the day when long hours in a day were the norm in manufacturing.
Yeah.
And were not rewarded by paying overtime. You see, if you're going to have to pay time and a half on hours more than 40 hours a week anyway, then there's no incentive really to not demand extremely long work days because you're going to have to pay time and a half anyway.
Mm-hmm. I guess we can ask Bowley later. I was trying to understand if we had data about how many employers are actually having people work. Can you work 13 hours a day, 5 days a week? Can you work 13 hours a day, 7 days a week?
Are you saying physically or is it
legally permitted?
It is legally permitted.
To work 13 hours a day, 7 days a week?
That's right.
Without any days off and then just go back and doing it the next day?
That's right. Okay. The only disincentive to do that is that the employer might want to use a different employee because they're going to have to pay at least time and a half for hours over 40. Mm-hmm. And in our reading, and I believe the correct reading, the commissioner's reading of the statute, you'd also have to pay time and a half for hours over 10 for whatever hours are over 10. And that's really the only disincentive economically to not having people work very long days like that.
And I'm just curious, are there any other areas of employment besides manufacturing where this would apply or?
Food processing.
Okay. All right. Okay. Any questions for Mr. Dale? Thank you. That was very informative. I appreciate that.
Hi, Chair Taylor, members of the committee. My name is Jessica Genentino, and I'll be testifying today on behalf of the Oregon AFL-CIO. We consider ourselves a voice for all workers in the legislative process and represent 300,000 working Oregonians in the state. As Michael mentioned, the first overtime statute that was put into place was to put into place to protect workers in the manufacturing sector because we knew that there was a recognition that this work is more physically demanding and has greater risks associated with it than other types of work. I think one important point to note is that we've heard that employers have historically only paid on weekly or daily, which is true. Up until 3 months ago, but from the time that the first overtime statute was enacted in the early 1900s up until the 40-hour work week, they were the only ones paying overtime. So they really were paying more than other employers, which is the situation that we're in now. According to NIOSH's overtime and extended work hours analysis from 2004, it looked at 52 studies relating to work hours, and they noted that there was a pattern of deteriorating performance on psycho and physiological tests as well as injuries while working long hours. And they also observed findings that particularly with very long shifts and when 12-hour work shifts combined with more than 40 hours of work a week, those impacts were exacerbated. Four studies focused on effects during extended shifts reported that the 9th and the 12th hour of work was associated with the feelings of decreased alertness, increased fatigue, lower cognitive function, and declines in vigilance on task measures and increased injuries. When we couple worker fatigue with above impacts, many of the poor working conditions that you'll hear from the workers on the next panel are going to share with you, it creates a work environment that should warrant a thoughtful approach to how we address overtime in these arduous work sectors like manufacturing. We also know that according to BLS data from 2015, manufacturing work ranks second in total injury cases annually. And I raise this because this is a difficult work sector. We know this. And when we couple that with overwork and long work hours, we know that those impacts can be exacerbated. One of the other things that I think we've heard a lot about today is the costs associated with paying both daily and weekly overtime is just too much a burden to bear. When we look at BLS stats on manufacturing wages, the average wage in the state of Oregon, which does include workers who are represented by a union, so they have a collective bargaining agreement, so we can make assumptions that their wages are higher, the wage is $20.62 an hour. You should have a graph in front of you that looks like this, and the only reason I'm going to walk us through this is because I think there might be some remaining questions, but it also gets at like how much this actually costs an employer and how much a worker gets to take home currently. So if a worker is scheduled 4 of 12-hour shifts, which is what I think Betsy Earle shared with us the manufacturers are currently doing, they accrue 2 hours of overtime per day. And after the 10th hour, and at the end of the week, they accrue a total of 8 weekly overtime hours. So at the rate of the pay from BLS, this would mean that the worker would now be expected to get paid $82.48 more per week gross than if the employer only had to pay the higher of the two. So we're really talking about $82.48 more than they would otherwise. For all the reasons I laid out above, we feel that these workers deserve that extra pay, but ultimately the hope is that paying both of these overtime hours will dissuade employers from scheduling workers for a duration of time that we know is detrimental to their safety and health, especially when they work in a difficult employment arena. And I would just highlight that again that we know that other states pay on both of these two because they recognize this reality. While we stand opposed to Senate Bill 984 and legislating the issue this way, we do believe that this bill raises the need to look further at our overtime statutes and have a thoughtful conversation about how work has evolved, and the need to continue to legislate in a way that prevents workers from experiencing the work situations that the panel on after us is going to share.
I have a question.
Yes, Senator Gelser.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, first. Senator Hansel. So I just noticed again, is there a reason that we keep using the 8 hours plus 8 hours? Is that because that's what the employer panel used as well? It's what you use that goes to these very long shifts. Is that typically what it is for 12-hour days?
That's typically what we see in manufacturing. And the max is that's related in the first overtime statute says that manufacturing workers can't work more than 48 hours in a week. So we're already seeing employers push the limit on what they're allowing workers to be paid.
So follow up.
Okay. I'm sorry.
So in the statute today, if we're doing the 8 and the 8, that's the maximum that could apply under this in the manufacturing field, because in no case can you work more than 48 hours a week?
We need to do the math on that.
Because I think you just said that the law says you can't work more than 48 hours a week.
Right.
So this is based on 4 12-hour shifts, which gets you to 48 hours. And if you can never get to more than 48 hours, wouldn't the maximum of getting the 8 hours both in the week and in the day, by definition, then would be the maximum
amount that an employer would be expected to pay and a worker would see? Michael?
If I could, this is Michael Deal. That, however, was not the experience at the work site that the case we're talking about deals with. The hours here, for example, in the week I pulled out, it's like 60 hours a week.
And that's the follow-up, though. The reason that there was a lawsuit then, though, was because that was against the law. So kind of going to my question earlier, my fear, like one of my biggest fears is, oh, my gosh, what if we have people being put on – 5 12-hour shifts, 6 12-hour shifts, 7 12-hour shifts in a week. Does the current law precludes that and maxes out at 4 12-hour shifts? I'm not arguing for 4 12-hour shifts. I'm just trying to understand what the current state of the law is.
Go ahead. I think we see employers go beyond this, right? This is an actual timesheet from a worker.
And I'm not disputing that, but my question is, I understand that people might be exceeding the law. My question is, in that case where the worker was working 60 hours, I'm not defending that or saying that that's okay, but was that employer breaking the law? Because I thought I heard you just say that the law says in manufacturing you cannot work more than 48 hours in a week.
Correct. So okay. This worker's timesheet was breaking that piece of the overtime statute.
Okay. Okay,
but I need something clarified. Mr. Dale, I thought you said that one can work 7 days a week, 13 hours a day. That's 91 hours a week.
There's language, actually. Sorry, Kate Newhall, for the record. I think if you look at Senate Bill 984 in Section 1, it actually spells out the statute, and it says, I would characterize this as most manufacturing workers can't work more than 48 hours in a week. The actual statute says can't work more than 48 hours in one calendar week, except logging train crews, guards, boiler operators, and persons engaged in the transportation to and from work. So I would just say that most manufacturing workers are precluded from working more than 48 hours in a week, but there are some.
So, Mr. Dale, just so I understand, I just want to make certain. So what was the reference then for the when I asked, can one work 7 days a week at 13 hours a day, which is 91 hours a week?
In some circumstances, that is the case.
But for most manufacturing, that is not the case.
Well, a couple things about that.
Okay.
There are statutory penalties for working more than 10 hours a day. There aren't statutory penalties for working more than 40 hours a week. 48 hours.
So while it's in statute, there's not a significant remedy. So workers will abuse.
Okay, so some workers are allowed, I don't know who can answer this, are there any workers in the state of Oregon that are allowed to work 7 days a week, 13 hours a day?
Yes.
Yes.
Who are those workers that are allowed to work 7 days a week, 13 hours a day?
And not that they're doing it, but that the law says that they can do that. Does that make
sense?
Senator Taylor, can I get back to you with
I was just trying to understand
this.
About, because
I
just want to make certain that we're not creating, I don't want to create an environment where if there is someone who had wanted to take advantage of a worker of putting them on.
Let me answer your question comprehensively.
At another time. Okay, sounds good.
With the benefit of...
yeah, no problem. I appreciate that. Okay, did you want to... Go ahead.
Okay. I have a question.
Oh, wait, I'm so sorry. I apologize, Senator Hensel.
I'm just looking at this sheet. Now, what I understood Boley to say is that the 8 hours of overtime daily is 1.5. And if you have 8 hours of daily overtime times 1.5 at $20.62, I get $247, not 82. And then for the 8 overtime hours at 0.5, that is 82.48, or for a total of over, 300 and some $320. So I'm a little bit confused here based upon what Boley just said is what's charged.
So I think, Chair Taylor, Senator Hansel, so the hourly is already calculated in the $20.62 times 48 hours. So that's the hourly. And then the half is on each of the 8 hours.
Why? It's 1.5.
The one is calculated in the 20.62 times 48
hours. What is the employee's regular rate of pay then?
20.62.
Per hour?
Per hour.
Okay, that's, and they'll get that with no overtime.
Right.
Okay, so if you have over 8 hours of overtime at 1.5, you don't get 82.48. You get 247.44.
Let me follow up and get back to you.
And then in addition to that, you get another 8 hours, which is 4 hours. That turns out to be 82.48. So I think your the point's being made here. That comes to $329.92. I don't see where this is accurate at all.
Senator Taylor, Chair Taylor, Senator Hansel, if I may, what we're trying to estimate is what is the additional cost above what it would be under this interpretation of the law. Under this interpretation of the law, you're already going to get your time for the hour, overtime hour, and you're already going to get one half time for the hour, because one way or the other, you're either going to get time and a half under daily overtime or weekly overtime, and that's what you get right now.
Well, of course it is, and that's why that's the issue. You get 8 hour daily overtime at a time and a half, and you get 8 on the weekly at 0.5. That's just what Boley said, and it's
the additional cost of Boley's interpretation is the 0.5 extra on the second overtime, which however you're counting it. So you're already going to have to pay time and a half under any interpretation. So it's only the 0.5 extra that's the extra cost. And that's what she's referring to.
Okay.
I just want to be sensitive to time, and we have some other folks here that I'd like to testify. Would it be helpful, Senator Hansel, if there was a follow-up?
I think I understand what he's saying.
Yeah. Okay, all right. Okay, so let's. So thank you all for coming up. Did you have anything you wanted to add?
Chair Taylor, members of the committee, I feel like most of the things that I was going to testify to have been covered, and they are, my testimony is in OLIS. I guess all I would just say is I think that the daily, weekly overtime protections do exactly exist to create a disincentive to having workers work more than 10 hours in a day. And okay, workers yes. don't really have that. I mean, if the employer decides to allow a worker a choice to decline working the extra overtime hours, they can, but there's nothing to require an employer giving that worker the choice. So this is that disincentive.
Okay. All right. Thank you. We're going to go ahead and call up Alejandro Mila, Rai Som, and Margaret Brown. Committee members, Rai Som is going to have an interpreter. So you understand that? Perfect. Hello. Welcome. You may need to pull up another chair. Get a fourth chair.
Do we have another panel after this?
We have Mr. Wilson and Lynn Barra both want to speak, and then we'll be done. Okay. So I'm going to go ahead and who would like to start?
I'll start.
Okay.
Make a correction on the last name, though.
I'm so sorry. I'm terrible at pronouncing.
No, that's not even my last name.
It's not even your last no. name. Oh my gosh, it's terrible. I'm so
correct.
Sorry.
So, Chair Taylor and members of committee, my name is Alejandro Humada. I live and work in Portland, Oregon. I'm here today because I'm a rank and file member of the BCTGM Local 114, and I had a chance to meet my these people right here. These bakers, to know them better about a year ago when they were trying to organize. I work in a bakery too, similar to to where they work. And I want to provide some context on manufacturing work as it relates to overtime. Obviously I wasn't around when the overtime statute for manufacturing was passed, but I can bet it had something to do with how difficult that work is. One other theme that you will hear from us today is also about how dangerous that work is and difficult. I've seen injuries to coworkers from the repetitive nature of our work, injuries that to their backs or getting tendonitis on their hands. Margaret and Rai will tell you similar experience that they've seen at their bakery. I don't stand to benefit or lose potential. I don't stand to benefit or lose protections personally because my collective bargaining agreement has overtime stipulation that workers and employer have agreed to. But I really urge you to consider everything we're going to tell you about how difficult and dangerous the work is, and consider having both of these statutes working together might dissuade employers from overscheduling workers like Rye and Margaret. Thank you.
Margaret, hello.
Hi. Chair Taylor, members of the committee. My name is Margaret Brown, and I live in Northeast Portland and work in Outer East County. I've worked in manufacturing for 9 years at the same plant. When I first started, I was making $9.50 an hour, and now, 9 years later, I make $12.25 an hour. Right now, I'm currently working 6 8-hour days per week, but I have worked longer hours before. I want to talk about the work in general, because when I'm scheduled for overtime, I do believe that I should get paid a little bit extra when I work over 10 hours a day and over 40 hours a week because the pace of work and dangers I'm exposed to. In my case, I would only get $6.12 more an hour per overtime hour, which I don't feel like is a lot to ask. I've done packaging for the bakery. We package muffins into trays and box them. The pace is pretty fast, especially when we do smaller pieces because there are so many of them. We do the same thing for at least 8 hours so that repeated motion gets more difficult. We must box up one box of six trays of muffins every 12 seconds. There's someone folding trays because the tray machine doesn't do it fast enough. It gets really cold in the wintertime. You have to wear thermals, and when it's hot, you're dripping in sweat. There is no air conditioning or heating. There are several big revent ovens and one giant autobake oven that releases lots of heat. The autobake is constantly moving as it cooks. When there are problems with a machine, we can't stop the line because the product will burn. That means workers have to do manually what they did mechanically to keep the line going. When this happens, it's stressful for the whole crew. The work in general is dangerous. The floors get very slippery when we have to wash them with water. There was a girl once that was cleaning a machine, and she got shocked very bad and had to go to the hospital. There was a loose wire that contacted her screwdriver. She was gone for a few months because her heart was affected and she had nerve damage. The supervisors can be nice. The lead can get easily stressed out and sometimes can lose patience with workers. He's the person in charge and he tells everyone what they need to be doing to keep the line running. He moves people around to different positions and he yells at people when they don't do something fast enough. A lot of people that work there are from other countries. I'm a minority there. When he yells at people, workers can get upset. Again, I want to share these stories with you because the work we do is different than what others are required to, and working at such a fast pace with dangerous machines isn't something workers should have to do when they're tired and overworked. And I feel that asking employers to pay a little extra when they schedule us over 10 hours a day and more than 40 hours in a week might convince them to be a little more thoughtful about the hours they require of us.
Thank you very much. Hello, welcome. Maybe we could, would you mind scooting over a little bit so that they can be in front of the microphone, please? Because we're gonna have to have an interpreter, so. Hey, so how are you? I know it's CS. Well, welcome to the Capitol. Glad to have you here. It's okay. It seems we're just glad to have you here. Come to talk with us. It's okay. Really, it is. We're not as scary as we look. So first, what we need you to do is we need to have her name and your name too, please, and say that you're interpreting for her, please. And I need to have the microphone moved over a little bit so they can hear you. And you may want to move the microphone over a little bit so that you, yeah, there you go. Well, I think she wants to speak for her.
Samri.
Do you want to?
My name is Samri. By the way, I'm Paul, the Cambodian interpreter.
Welcome.
I didn't prepare this one. I didn't read.
Paul, what is your last name, please?
Paul Nim.
Okay.
Thank you.
So do you want to go ahead and tell us what she has said so far?
She just said that my name is Risam.
My name is Risam.
I told her to speak Cambodian.
I'm working in Portland. I'm working in Portland. I'm working in Portland.
My name is Yunagay Risong. I work in Portland, Oregon. I come here to tell you guys all about the difficulties in my job.
Thank you.
Yeah, I work in a very difficult, good job, and getting very hot.
ពេលនំហើយម៉ាស៊ីនបើកក្តៅខ្លាំងដែលខ្ញុំខំរកពុំបានឈប់សម្រាកប៉ុន្តែក្រោយមកក្តៅខ្លាំងពេកខ្ញុំក៏ចំហទឹកទូទឹកកកខ្ញុំចូលទៅក្នុង
Well, when I work so hard in the bakery, and then a lot of heat come out, so I have to, open the freezer door.
Yeah, I try
very hard to work, in my job. While I'm working, sometimes the machine can break down. I try to get a little rest too, but this one here, it just creates it more and more difficult. I try to work, get very hard, my job, even though one is get broken, and then I try to work with another that is on really get demanding. Yeah, the first week I work 8 hours. And in the second week, I work, good 12, 13 hours. When I get paid, get paid only 12 hours. And then when I ask, why, I get paid 12 hours, they say, well, give 1 hour, they didn't pay. I worked there for 3 years. Sometimes they, I work and get off at 1 o'clock, and then they call me back. They come back to work again. I can't stay longer and working there.
Yeah,
it's very difficult. Sometimes I try to help the other people that couldn't do, but they just, I get the blame for it. Sometimes when I stand and talk, and they just come in and yell at me. Sometimes those guys get injured, they get burned, and they just can't, you know, get stopped from working. They just tell them, say, go ahead and put medicines on and come back to work.
Yeah,
some of the medicine that they have there is already expired.
Yeah,
sometimes I go in and kind of try to help them out. Yeah, sometimes I just, you know, stop my machine to go in and help someone else.
Yeah, okay,
I'd rather they have them, you know, get yell at me, and then I can help them. Yeah, and then, you know, I just ask myself not to work them anymore.
Is there anything else you'd like to add?
I want to ask something.
Is the law going to allow
people to work?
Then can I
work in one day and then work night?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear, understand.
If the law allows, you know, someone to work day and then come into work night again.
I think that we need to have Boley come up and answer that question. Generally, we don't have the panels ask questions of the committee, but we, in this case, I'm more than happy to make an exception, and we can ask Paloma if she could come and answer that question, please.
Depends how many hours.
Would you mind standing up so Paloma can sit in your seat, please? Thank you so much. I apologize.
No, thank you.
Thank you. So we're going to break convention here. We're going to get crazy here in the legislature, and we're going to have you answer that question.
So is the question was whether or not you could work a day and a night shift? Is that, am I understanding that correctly?
No, just to clarify.
Well, in her, you know, her own situation, she worked, and when she got off, such as she got off at 1 o'clock, and about 2 or 3 hours later, they called her back to come to back to work again.
Paloma,
Chair Taylor, members of the committee, there, Paloma Sparks with the Bureau of Labor and Industries, there's no prohibition as long as somebody's not working more than 13 hours in a 24-hour period, and that 13-hour in a 24-hour period is only in manufacturing.
Yeah, I work, you know, regular hours and overtime total 78 hours.
Okay, well, thank you for sharing that. And
didn't you say 78 hours a week?
I believe you said 78 hours
yes.
a week.
Yes. I took out Tom time with just clarify, you know, sir, that 40 hours, regular hours, and then overtime, 38 hours, total week, work week was 78 hours.
Okay, thank you for sharing that. I'm going to ask Paloma, I mean, afterwards, maybe you could talk with her, and if she has additional questions, you could answer her questions. Would that be okay?
Sure.
There's an individual from the Bureau of Labor and Industries, which is the government agency that writes the rules and enforces the rules about workplace environments. Is this woman here, and she can help answer your questions afterwards. I want to thank everyone from the panel. Does anyone have any
Senator
questions for our guests? Yes, Senator Gelser.
So how many days do you have a day off during the week? Are you working 7 days, 6 days, 5 days?
Yeah, she works 6 days. And then sometimes, you know, give someone sick, and then they call her back to work.
Okay. And then did Senator
Hanson? Actually, I had a question for Alejandro, if that's possible.
Yes, of course.
Sir, you had mentioned that you really didn't have a dog in this fight, so to speak, because your union had already negotiated your overtime. What did your union negotiate by way of overtime provisions for you?
We get paid overtime after 7.5 hours.
7.5 hours.
We don't have the
straight overtime and no weekly or.
Yeah, we don't have the weekly. We do have the. We get double time if we work 6 days in a row without a day off.
Yeah.
And if we keep working without a day off, it's still double time until we get a day off.
Okay. Thank you.
Any other questions? Thank you for coming and sharing your stories. We very much appreciate it. It was very nice of you to come to SAM. It was very interesting, and it helps. It's very important to have folks come from different parts of the state and tell us what your experiences are, because it helps shape our opinions about when we draft legislation and pass bills. So thank you very much for coming.
Thank you.
Okay. So we're going to go ahead and call up J.L. Wilson and Lynn Barra.
Thank you.
Mr. Wilson.
Yeah.
Hello. Who would like to start?
I'll start. Okay. Chair Taylor and members of the committee, for the record, I'm J.L. Wilson, representing the Oregon State Chamber of Commerce and the Northwest Food Processors Association. We do support Senate Bill 984. I think the one thing that I'll add before Lynn gets into her real-life example is that the thing we're noticing with our manufacturers is they're actually going to worker-friendly schedules, which typically now is including a 3-12 on 1 week and a 4-12 on the second week, and you alternate those weeks. And under those scenarios, under current law, employees are currently being paid 6 hours of overtime on a 36-hour week. That's the effect of the daily overtime law. Our issue really comes into play here with Senate Bill 94 on that second week where you have 4-12s. The 4-12s, you're essentially getting paid double overtime for that, for all the hours over 40. And it does represent about an 8% increase in payroll for that week in a schedule that employees are generally very favorable to. They like the 3-12 followed by the 4-12. And so 984, and that, you know, and the payments for that changed with one interpretation just a couple of months ago. And so we would like to see go back to the interpretation as we knew it for all those years. We think Senate Bill 984 with the dash once gets us there. And the one thing I do want to impress upon the committee, there is a movement toward employee-friendly schedules that are impacted by the current BOLI interpretation, and we'd like to go back. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Hello.
Hi. My name is Lynn Barra. I own a company in Lake Oswego called Paradigm Foodworks. We're a specialty food manufacturer. So we're a food processor, but we are also fall under the manufacturing laws. I was asked to come and speak today to speak to my personal experience and the hardships that this interpretation has and can place on my company. The new interpretation of the overtime laws that have been in practice for, I thought it was 40, apparently it's been 70 plus years, will have a strong negative impact on all manufacturing businesses, none more so than the small to medium-sized businesses that make up a large percentage of Oregon's economy. Paradigm Foodworks employs 28 people. 7 of them are in our manufacturing plant. We make sauces. We also package other goods. But most of our manufacturing is making things from salad dressings to dessert toppings. My crew has been with me between 3 and 7 years and is extremely committed to my company. They depend on their overtime, and anytime they lose a day or a couple hours, they complain. Specific points to my experience as a business owner, the overtime that we pay and that we require is very seasonal. What we call barbecue season runs from spring through the end of the summer. And that includes, you know, all the barbecue sauces, salsas, ketchup, anything that seems to be consumed more during the summer months. And we have four very large customers that we work with who have declared that if we can't keep up with their demands, they'll go to another packer. My crew has told me a couple of times since the first of the year that they're going to have to look for second jobs if they can't maintain the level of overtime that they're getting. By my analysis of the BOLI interpretation, it's a little different from what has been testified earlier. The way we calculated it is triple time on the overtime hours that are both daily and weekly. It's triple time, not an extra half hour. It's 1.5 times 2. The only way to recoup those expenses is to raise prices, and in most cases in our business, that's not possible. If we continue to restrict hours, as I said, two of our companies have threatened to move on. In the practical sense, the overtime calculations, and I think you've seen this, some version of this. These are BOLI examples. I used to teach math, and I cannot understand this. This is extremely unintuitive. It interprets the example two. Relegates standard straight time to 34 hours in a week, so you don't even get to pay your employees 40 hours of straight time. In this case, it's 34 straight time and 38 overtime. And of those, 9 of them are double. This interpretation, and it hasn't been mentioned so far today either, was dropped on the business community somewhat surreptitiously. It was never announced. There were no letters sent out. We found out through our Cascade Employers Association that this was happening. So I found out after it started. To calculate these, they have to be done manually. So my bookkeeper has to take every time card every week and calculate out. It can't be automated. It has to be calculated out individually. So there's a burden of additional labor in this case, as well as the cost of the labor itself. Typically, new laws, interpretations, legislative acts are given the businesses or the affected parties are given time to learn how to deal with it, how to calculate, how to plan for it. And this was not the case in this interpretation this year. I also believe that employees will not benefit from this change because employers will cut their hours rather than pay the triple time. And my employees, maybe I'm not typical and I can only speak to my own experience, my employees love working for this company. We treat them very well, and I do not want to lose them, and I stand to lose them if I can't give them the hours they're used to. If this interpretation is allowed to stand, it will without a doubt kill the manufacturing industry in Oregon, and it will severely discourage new companies from opening manufacturing plants in here. I'm asking you to vote yes on Senate Bill 984 to help prevent these unintended consequences from occurring. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Does anybody have any questions? All right. Thank you for coming. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mr. Wilson.
You have just one question.
Okay. Senator Hansel.
What is the number of your workforce, ma'am?
28. Yes.
I have a question.
Yes, Senator Moss.
Are you able to pay benefits and vacation?
Yes. Vacation, medical insurance. I've paid medical insurance since I had 5 employees. I've been in business for 36 years. And they have paid holidays, paid vacations, sick time, all the above.
Okay. All right. Thank you both.
Thank you.
All right. So is everybody that signed up? So I'm going to go ahead and close the public hearing on Senate Bill 984. We are going to be meeting again on Monday, the 3rd, I believe that is, And on Monday's committee members, on Monday we are going to have our hearing will be about fair scheduling, predictive scheduling. We had a hearing on that before, and we're going to have the whole committee time dedicated to that again. We had a lot of questions last time. There's, I believe it's called the Dash 3 Amendment. Is that correct, Deborah?
That's correct.
And so I encourage all of you to look at the Dash 3 Amendment and understand what's in there. There are some pretty significant changes to the bill. So I want everyone to come ready to ask questions, be well informed, et cetera, so we can have a lively discussion. Yes, Senator Hensel.
Hate to say this, but I will not be here on Monday.
Okay. Thank you.
I won't be in the building on Monday.
Pardon me?
I won't even be in the building.
That's I'm glad to say that you're not going to be here and not come to committee. But, okay. I just wanted everybody to be aware of that. All right. So we're going to go ahead and join the meeting of the Senate Committee on Workforce. And thank you, everyone, for coming.